Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, classical pianist and YouTube sensation Valentina Lisitsa speaks with our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield about her career and her upcoming appearance at the Festival of the Arts Boca March 15th. Film critic Dan Hudak previews the Oscars, and Friends of Chamber Music of Miami's Julian Krieger has the details about their concert series through May. Formed in 1991, the Grassroots Festival Organization Incorporated has produced festivals all over the East Coast and raised over $1 million for the arts, education, and the fight against AIDS. Originally formed in Trumansburg, New York, the not-for-profit organization has presented the annual Finger Lakes Grassroots Festival of Music and Dance in upstate New York. In 2003, they presented the Shikori Hills Grassroots Festival of Music and Dance in North Carolina, a twice-yearly produced event. And last year, they branched out to South Florida and Key Biscayne. Their initial effort was met with cold, inclement weather, but this year, the second annual Grassroots Festival of Music, Dance, and Art has clear skies projected all weekend long on historic Virginia Key. And with us today to describe all of this excitement, incredible excitement, is John O'Potts, promotions coordinator and jack of all trades for the festival. And welcome to South Florida Arts Beat, John O.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today, Ed. I really appreciate it.
I am so excited that you guys are here in South Florida. Your second event will be huge this weekend. You started it today, and we want to try to get to as much as possible. But this is one of the most comprehensive, incredible festivals I have heard about, and it covers so many different areas. It's more than just music presentation, workshops, all sorts of stuff going on. So let's start with the Roots in the Schools program. You're taking music to our Miami-Dade County schools.
Yeah, we're bringing music right into the schools. We did three of them in the last 2 weeks. We're going to hope to continue to do that. We bring them right into the schools. Arts and education is a huge thing for us. And, you know, the kids are always the future. And sharing that with them is great. We've had Cordadito, Matthew Sabatelli is actually playing this afternoon. Elastic Bond played for us. And actually, Lebo, one of our local artists, came and did live art with them. We're going to try and continue to do this year-round. Grassroots is a positive, forward-moving organization that likes to reach out into the community as much as possible.
Many more segments to talk about, but take me back, Jono, to your early efforts to form your not-for-profit. Who was involved and why was it created? Simply to produce a cultural event and raise money for worthy causes, or do you have other goals?
We do try and reach out as much as we can to the community. It was actually originated in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. Donna the Buffalo is sort of our host band, and they came together with this concept and kicked it off at the State Theater in Ithaca, and it's just rolled on from there. And it's a platform. It's created a lot of different things, like you talked about Shikori Hills. There we have a separate non-for-profit that's a community arts center on a 75-acre plot of property out there, which offers a lot of opportunity to kids and different groups to use that space as well. We branch out to the community through music is our venue to get it there. It's an avenue, but what we really want to do is bring different groups together and let them meet and offer, the platform for them to move forward and create a lot of social change, sustainability, green living, things like that. It's amazing when you bring all these different people together, the combined thought process, minds, and love, what it really creates has been amazing for all of us.
Well, you talked about sustainability, and you have a sustainability fair within the festival this weekend.
Yeah, we have a whole sustainability tent. We have 9 different groups that are going to be there all weekend long, 15 different workshops over the course of the weekend, everything from composting to bike safety, just green living, solar energy power. It's really, really great. We're trying, to help share that with Miami. We do all of our own composting and all recyclable materials out there. Every one of our festivals is completely green. all the way from start to finish.
Wow, that's magnificent. Mm-hmm. That's just above and beyond the call of duty. So Roots in the Schools program, a sustainability fair, local affiliations. Let's talk about that. You're really branching out to South Floridians.
Yeah, you know, we're really trying to get into the community here. We don't want to be something that just comes out and throws a music festival. Mm-hmm. We want to come out and join up with the community. So we've joined in with the Zen Village. Has been very involved with us.
What do they do for you?
Oh, they're doing all kinds of stuff. They're actually helping put together the festival this year. They're doing our healing arts. They're doing tensegrity, yoga workshops, meditation workshops, tai chi, martial arts. You can get up. You can stay there, camp, wake up in the morning and do yoga on the beach. Do yoga on the sunset with some of the most amazing yogis you'll ever meet. Master Sai is incredible, and they've really helped us. They were actually a big reason we came back down here this year.
So. Mm-hmm. Other affiliations?
You know, the Historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust is trying to save that space out there. We're working with the Moksha Family Arts Collective, the Community Arts and Culture. Yo Miami is a great local group that's bringing live art out to the festival.
Live art?
We have people who are going to be painting all weekend long. They're doing murals during the festival. Mm-hmm. We'll have
by the side of the stage?
Yeah, right by the side of the stage is where Yo Miami will be. Lebo, I think a lot of people probably know who he is.
Oh,
he's a local artist. He's going to be up on stage painting during Rusted Root and during Kisakoa, and these artwork will then be taken and auctioned off for charity. So that's a really great thing. So live art is just, you know, it's people creating art with the music. They use their feelings of what the music is, and they create a whole bunch of different stuff.
We did that at the Hollywood Jazz Festival in the mid-80s, and our featured artist was a wonderful guy named Jonas Gerard. He's up in Asheville, North Carolina now, but a wonderful, eccentric, big soul.
Yeah.
And it really adds a magnificent a visual component to a live musical event.
Yeah.
And includes another segment of the arts.
Yeah, it's great. You know, we had this guy, Devel, came out yesterday. He's out there again today. And in the course of a day, he painted an entire mural down the side of a 52-foot trailer. Our trailer is going to go up and down the eastern seaboard with Grassroots and Miami art right on the side of it. So that's
great.
We can
toot our horns when we see you guys go flying up 95 or something like that. Kids Village, this is a big family festival. You invite everybody to bring their family out there. There's all sorts of great food. Bring a blanket, bring your chairs. You can even bring a cooler, but please no glass, as you tell us. But you've got a Kids Village. What's that all about?
Yeah, we're really a family-friendly event. We have a whole kids tent set up. The kids can come over. They can paint. They can hang out. We even do kids yoga.
You know,
it's really great. It's a way for them to enjoy it. You know, this is about a lot more than, you know, just coming out and seeing bands. You know, you bring the whole family out. You have a picnic. You can camp out on the beach if you want. Mm. And then you go over, and the kids have these activities. We do the Let's Emerge Freedom Parade is this great thing that we do where the kids get all painted up, face paint, they make flags, and then we do a parade around the site playing music and hanging out, and they just love it. It's great.
John Opatz, our guest today, he's promotions coordinator for the second annual Virginia Key Grassroots Festival. It runs through Sunday on Virginia Key, Historic Virginia Key. For more info, go to virginiakeygrassroots.org, or you can call their office at 786-409-5261, 786-409-5261. As we say, a great family-friendly event. And you assure us there's still more camping room?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can come right in and set up your tent. We have plenty of room for people. You know, we do vehicle camping and RV camping as well. I stayed out there last night, and I can tell you it was beautiful.
Tell me what your morning was like.
I woke up this morning to the breeze coming off the ocean. I fell asleep last night to a great bluegrass band playing in the campgrounds. They were picking away, and I fell asleep to that. Woke up to the sun rising, got up, the breeze coming off the beach, and I walked out, and I went swimming in the ocean and looked right back at our 10,000-square-foot dance tent right there from the beach. Amazing.
Man, that's living, buddy.
Yeah.
So many great groups. You all have done a magnificent job in reaching out to many different musical genres here in South Florida. Swenelo, Donna the Buffalo, you said your early co-founders. Spam All-Stars, Elastic Bond, Johnny Dredd, Bobby Lee Rogers, Crazy Fingers, and on and on and on. Ike and Val on your list. Inner Circle, the Gold Dust Lounge. I mean, you have Matthew Sabatella, Rambling String Band. You have really done a great job. Osceola Brothers, magnificent job in bringing all these diverse musical genres together.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the way we've done our festivals. I've been lucky enough to see music from all over the world. I mean, last night I was Zydeco dancing to Preston Frank, who's, if you don't know Zydeco music, is the best Zydeco in the world.
That's in your heritage.
That is there, and I love it.
Bluegrass. Your dad was a bluegrass
My dad was
player?
An old-time fiddle player, actually.
Wow.
A little bit different, but yeah, for sure. And then, you know, we do the Native American side, and then you go and you see, you know, locals Poruana do their Latin, you know, funk, and it's great, great times. We have a group called Moksha Family Arts Collective out there, and they do electronica DJ. That we have people spinning fire last night, doing performance art out there, light shows and stuff. Everything you're looking for, you can find it right there.
This is like Burning Man without the attitude.
Well, you know, we have a little bit of attitude, but ours is more peace and love.
Yeah, and God bless you, man. Great food. You all are producing all of your own food, but you have, what, about six different food. You're offering vegetarian, you're offering vegan, you're offering subs.
Yeah, we have pretty much anything you could want out there. We have a lot of different food. We have some fantastic New York-style pizza, sandwiches, salad bar, there's coffee, anything you really want, from vegan to vegetarian to, you know, meat dishes, fruit smoothies and ice cream. It's great. And we put that on all ourselves.
Man, I got to tell you, John O'Potts, our guest, the promotions coordinator for the second annual Virginia Key Grassroots Festival, one of the most comprehensive events I've heard of in eons down here in South Florida. For more info, go to virginiakeygrassroots.org, or you can call 786-409-5261. And thank you so much, John O'Potts, for joining us here on the show. And for general information, go to grassrootsfest.org. Good luck, my friend.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope everybody has the opportunity to come out and check us out this weekend. It's going to be beautiful and sunny, and we're going to have so much fun.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, film critic Dan Hudak previews the Oscars, and Julian Krieger has the details about the Friends of Chamber Music of Miami's upcoming concerts. Right now, our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield speaks with a brilliant concert pianist and YouTube sensation who will be performing in Boca Raton on March 15th.
The Russian pianist Valentina Lisitsa has joked that she doesn't want to be yet another blonde Russian pianist, as if her striking stage presence has not triggered more YouTube hits than probably any other Russian pianist worldwide. Her technique is quite remarkable, as witnessed by her first viral web video a few years back of Rachmaninoff's Etude Opus 39 No. 6, nicknamed Little Red Riding Hood. With over a million hits, the Ukrainian-born pianist gives a dramatic enactment of the etude. First, its quick, menacing bass scale, then the contrast of the Little Red Riding Hood scamper of the treble hand as it flees the big, bad bass wolf, and then the Rachmaninoff liftoff and flight to the exciting conclusion, all at breakneck speed. Valentina Lisitsa spent the first half of her life in Russia, studying as a child and teenager at the State Conservatory in Kiev. She met her future husband there, Alexei Kuznetsov, and together they formed a team who won the Murray Dranoff II piano competition in Miami in 1991. After fellowships and some teaching in the States, she reemerged as a solo pianist, gaining internet fame with a series of YouTube videos starting in 2007 with Chopin Etudes that reached the number one slot on Amazon's classical video recordings. After a successful recording of Rachmaninoff's concertos with the London Symphony Orchestra in 2010, she made her Royal Albert Hall debut last spring and signed with Decca Records. It is estimated by last summer her YouTube videos have reached close to 50 million hits. Valentina Lisitsa closes the Festival of the Arts Boca March 15th at 7:30 p.m. with conductor Peter Ungen and the New World Symphony in Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, Opus 43 by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Recently, I had the opportunity to speak to Valentina from her hotel in Paris about her life in Russia, YouTube, Rachmaninoff, and her upcoming performance at the Festival of the Arts, BOCA. Valentina Lisitsa, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
I'm delighted to be with you. It's a long distance. I'm calling from Paris at the moment.
Now, at the age of 5, you started the piano in Kiev in the Ukraine. What makes the Russian system of piano performance unique or special? Could you describe the Russian state piano system when you were a child and teenager? You have a very impressive technique. Does it belong to a Russian school, a special teacher, or is it just a gift?
Well, first of all, the correction. I started when I was 3 years and 8 months. So it's a huge difference in the life of, you know, 3-year-old or 5-year-old. I have a 7-year-old boy, and boy, does he grow. You know, the difference in that age is very big. So I started, at least according to my grandmother, it was 3 years and 8 months. And no, it wasn't about Russian school or anything. Actually, I didn't know what Russian school was then. And I'm very puzzled when people ask me, you know, the same question, do you belong to Russian school? And then I ask people in exchange, okay, which Russian school are you talking about? The Russian school, you know, we know Russian school of Rachmaninoff playing, of, you know, all the golden age pianists. Or Russian schools that went to win all the competitions, basically very athletic, very clean, very non-denominational kind of playing, you know, to please all the jurors, to impress the audience. If that's so-called Russian school, no, I don't belong to that school. But for the Rachmaninoff school, yes, absolutely.
Now, when we talk about Rachmaninoff, I know that in 1991 you were successful with your husband, Alexei, on the Murray Dranoff two-piano competition in Miami. You won that. And then you could have done just a career with your husband with the two-piano, but somehow you decided to go to a solo career. How did you make that difficult choice?
Well, the choice was difficult, but for different reasons. Yes, we came, you know, we came naive, white-eyed youngsters. We were all excited, and we thought we'll make this career, but also we were taught, you know, but also thought about a couple of things, you know, two misconceptions. One misconception is that everybody, you know, once you, the most difficult part is to get to West, and because they embrace everything Russian, once you're there, you will make it. Just, you know, the procedure of getting there and getting your name known, that's all that it takes. So that was first thing. And second thing, which we were taught, you know, by our parents, by our teachers, everything, was you just work hard, you do your best, and everything will come by itself. You know, you don't need to do so. Some other people will make your career and everything. So, of course, you know, in business schools in the United States, they teach, you know, immediately this fallacy about the mousetrap, which was never taught in Russia, you know, about the person who made the best mousetrap and the person who advertised the best mousetrap. Well, people, of course, came to him. So we had, but, you know, they don't teach those things in music. They do teach them now, you know, in big music schools, in Juilliard, in Berlin. They actually have courses. They invite people, you know, to talk about business of music. You know, how do you promote yourself? What do you do? What can you expect? We came, you know, yes, oh, we won a competition, we're done. Our life from now on will be living happily ever after. What we didn't realize, first of all, we wanted to play only the wonderful, sweet, you know, unknown music. And yet people who wanted to market, you know, people in business, in music business, who wanted to market duo piano, it was something about crossover. We were supposed to play popular tunes, you know, to look cute, to act on stage. And we were absolutely not only not ready to do it, but we didn't want to do it. Even now with all our knowledge, you know, deep expertise of living and working in the business of music, we wouldn't do it second time around.
Let me just say this, that you then became acquainted, of course, with the social media. You did YouTube. I know everyone knows that you've done a lot of work with YouTube, many, many hits.
Well, YouTube turned out to be lucky media for me because, of course, there is a huge ocean of social media. You know, there's Twitter, Facebook, there used to be MySpace. I don't know what will be next. But YouTube was a good combination because, yes, it was social network, but it was based around thinks that I do playing piano. So that was very important for me. And at the moment, you know, probably this week, I think I'm having like 55 million views, which is kind of meaningless number because it's so big, you know, like with all those, when our governments throw around billions and trillions, people lose sensitivity to those numbers. So 55 million people who watched me playing, you know, boring classical piano on YouTube means nothing. But if you think in terms that every day there are 50,000 people who from around the world who listen to me play, okay? And that, every time, you know, when I stop and think about it, it gives me a bit of chills. It's like playing every night for a full stadium of 50,000 people. Lifting your finger.
That's quite amazing. What does the Golden Mean mean to you in Rachmaninoff?
It doesn't mean much for me because Rachmaninoff is all about extremes, you know, extreme emotions, extreme feelings, you know, in his playing. Rachmaninoff, it's a unique situation because we have not only the composer, but we have arguably the best pianist who played his music. And now we go and, you know, we start saying, oh, but he played it too fast, for example, Third Concerto, and we're more used to something slower like Richter or Kissin. You know, Rachmaninoff, yeah, he would say, you know, everybody loved in conservatory to talk about this Golden Mean. That was like famous word, but nobody was really following it.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean much. You know, it's something to break. It's a rule to break.
That's a good way of explaining it. Now, let's just hypothetically, if you were talking to a student about memory, about memorization, or advice for students, the nerves of performing, or technique, or breathing, do you have any suggestions that you would have for younger pianists who are just starting off?
Of course, it's very simple suggestion, and it covers just about any music. You don't play notes. You play something. You play a story. And it doesn't need to be in words. It can be, you know, in images. It can be moving in your head. It can be just feeling of something. But if you remember your feelings or your words or your story, that's what you remember. You don't remember notes or those, you know, little pesky black signs on white paper. It's always about something. You know, it's very easy to memorize when there is sense to it. It's if you would try to memorize foreign language, you know, poem without knowing what it means, it would be very difficult. But if you know what it is about and it's something that touches you, it makes it incredibly easy.
Absolutely. Now, your upcoming concert at the Festival of the Arts Boca on March 15th, you're going to be with Peter Ungen and the New World Symphony. You're doing the Rhapsody on a theme of Paganini. It's not called a concerto, but isn't it a concerto?
No, it's not a concerto because there is more orchestra, actually, especially in the beginning, than piano. Its parts are more or less equally spread out. There is no traditional form with, you know, with slow movements or fast movements. And piano is part of orchestra. But one thing stands about this music, because, you know, we love to talk about Rachmaninoff as being this romantic kind of dinosaur, 19th century romantic who lived in 20th century. And once I was told this story by a very elderly gentleman who happened to be a young player in Cleveland Symphony. And he happened to play with Rachmaninoff himself when Rachmaninoff was playing Rhapsody. And he liked the piece so much that after the first rehearsal, he came to Rachmaninoff and he congratulated him and said, "Maestro Rachmaninoff, I think this is the best piece of 20th century music." And Rachmaninoff, with his heavy Russian accent, turned to him and said, "You know, young man, this is not a piece of 20th century music. This is my commentary on 20th century music." So that's perfect description.
Perfect
it's
description.
A commentary.
Now, you're working now with Decca. What is going on with Decca? You have a schedule coming up for 2013?
Well, actually, Rachmaninoff will be a complete set of concertos, 1, 2, 3, 4, and Rhapsody. Will be released just in time for me coming to Miami with New World Symphony in Boca. It's released in USA, I think, on the 12th of March. In London, it's the day before, so I will be flying from London. And in the week, I'm playing in Berlin Philharmonie, so that's where they'll have first sales.
And
so it's there, you know, this long, big project, Rachmaninoff project. Then there will be some other things in pipeline. Liszt, Chopin, other secret projects. But it's fun.
Thank you, Valentina, so much for participating on South Florida Arts Beat.
My pleasure, truly.
Valentina Lisitsa has beaten the odds in the cutthroat competitive world of solo piano performance, leaving a successful, if predictable, career as a two-piano team for the uncharted waters of world concert touring was a courageous challenge. Through the power of the internet and the recent phenomenon of social media, especially the use of YouTube videos, she bypassed the traditional road for solo pianists and emerged a winner. You can see the remarkable pianist Valentina Lisitsa perform Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, Opus 43, with the New World Symphony and conductor Peter Ungen, March 15th at the Festival of the Arts Boca. For more information and to purchase tickets, call 561-368-8445 or 866-571-2787 and visit festivalofthearts.boca.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Julian Krieger tells us about the enticing upcoming concerts for the Friends of Chamber Music of South Florida. Now, film critic Dan Hudak calls the winners on this weekend's Academy Awards.
Let's be blunt. The Oscars are boring when they're predictable, and a lot of fun when they're not. Most years, it's a mixed bag of categories that are easy to pick and those that not even Karnak can see coming, and this year is no different. Of the big six major categories discussed here, picture, director, actor, actress, supporting actor, and supporting actress, three are virtual locks, two are a bit shaky, and one is anyone's guess. If nothing else, at least we have Family Guy's Seth MacFarlane as the host to keep us entertained on Oscar Sunday, February 24th. Let's start with an easy one, a category that the Academy will make you wait 3 hours to hear, but that we know is inevitable. Argo is going to win Best Picture, and rightfully so, as I consider it the best film of 2012. It's won all the major awards leading in. The story makes Hollywood a hero, which voters will love, and I think I still have a lump in my throat from the last half hour of the film. It's truly great filmmaking. Except for Beasts of the Southern Wild, Silver Linings Playbook, and Lincoln, the latter two of which I respected but didn't necessarily like, the other nominees were superb as well. Amour made me cry, which never happens at movies. Django Unchained was terrific film art with a strong message. Les Miserables had a sweeping emotional resonance that is difficult to achieve. Life of Pi is the most beautiful movie I have ever seen. And Zero Dark Thirty is a strong drama with a stirring finale. Still, Argo deservedly will win and should win. And as a side note, check this out. This will be the second year in a row John Goodman has starred in the Best Picture Oscar winner. You'll recall that last year he played a studio head in The Artist. Speaking of former Oscar winners, with a win for Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis will join Katharine Hepburn as the only actors with three lead actor Oscars. And who will be presenting Day-Lewis with the award? The woman largely considered the greatest actress of her generation, Meryl Streep. Even those who didn't love Lincoln as a movie, like me, certainly appreciated Day-Lewis's incredible lived-in performance as the 16th President of the United States. In another year, any of the other nominees will be strong contenders to win, as all of the actors in this category were fabulous, including Hugh Jackman in Les Miserables, Denzel Washington in Flight, Joaquin Phoenix in The Master, and Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook. But at the end of the day, there's no doubt that Day-Lewis will win and should win. For as much as Day-Lewis is a lock for lead actor, you can count on Anne Hathaway as even more of a lock for supporting actress for Les Miserables. Her performance was, in a word, heartbreaking, and her stunning rendition of I Dreamed a Dream gave goosebumps to even the most hardened and unfeeling of cynics. Have a listen. Just absolutely beautiful. We also see her get a real live haircut in the film, which is not a reason for her to win, but it does show a gutsiness that other Hollywood types will respect. Other nominees are two-time Oscar winner Sally Field for Lincoln, Helen Hunt for The Sessions, Amy Adams for The Master, and Jackie Weaver for Silver Linings Playbook. All worthy nominees, but you can start etching Hathaway's name onto the statue now because she will win and should win. The lead actress category is a bit more up for grabs. Most speculate it's between favorite Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook and Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, but don't count out Emmanuelle Riva from Amour, a film that tugged at the heartstrings more than any other this year. Also nominated are Kwavenzeni Wallace from Beast of the Southern Wild and Naomi Watts, who was phenomenal in The Impossible. Because Lawrence has won the important awards going into Oscar night, I'll say she will win, even though Watts, as a mother wanting to reunite her family after a devastating tsunami, should win. For supporting actor, Tommy Lee Jones is the favorite, but any of the five nominees, all of whom have won Oscars in the past, could emerge victorious. Christoph Waltz proves he was born to speak Quentin Tarantino's words in his great performance in Django Unchained. Robert De Niro actually acted again for a change in Silver Linings Playbook. Philip Seymour Hoffman was one of the highlights of The Master, and Alan Arkin provided perfect comic relief in Argo. That said, Jones's bombastic grandstanding should be enough to get him his second statue. Just listen to him verbally slap around a congressional colleague, 1860s style.
How can I hold that all men are created equal when here before me stands stinking the moral carcass of the gentleman from Ohio, proof that some men are inferior, endowed by their maker with dim wits, impermeable to reason, with cold, pallid slime in their veins instead of hot red blood. You are more reptile than man, George, so low and flat that the foot of man is incapable of crushing you.
How dare you!
With that type of ferocity, it's hard to deny the man, so Jones will win, even though Waltz should win. And finally, Best Director, which is anyone's guess. Ordinarily, the winner of the Directors Guild of America Award is the frontrunner, but the DGA winner for Argo, Ben Affleck, inexplicably isn't nominated here. Pundits are guessing it will be either Lincoln's Steven Spielberg winning his third Oscar or Life of Pi's Ang Lee getting his second. But don't count out Michael Haneke for Amour, an emotional and unflinching story that is a notable highlight of Haneke's considerable career. Also nominated are Ben Zeitlin for Beast of the Southern Wild and David O. Russell for Silver Linings Playbook, which is the first movie since Reds in 1981 to have a nominee in all four acting categories. This is a tough call, but I'll say Haneke will win even though Affleck should win. And I don't care that Affleck isn't nominated. He deserves this award, and it's a travesty that he's not up for it. Whatever happens on Oscar night, always remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is not for gambling purposes, as the Oscars should not be taken too seriously. Yes, they are a time to champion and cheer for your favorites and passion runs deep, but remember, life goes on, win or lose, and the bottom line is, it's Hollywood's night to celebrate Hollywood. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Now, Charles Greenfield delivers the details about the final concerts presented by a renowned South Florida organization offering concerts for nearly 60 years.
Friends of Chamber Music of Miami, under the leadership of Julian Krieger, has established not only longevity in South Florida's cultural scene, but demonstrated great depth and excellence due to its broad performance schedule over decades, 57 years to be exact. Not surprisingly, its high-caliber repertoire of chamber music has made its local reputation insurmountable, but sadly kept its numbers relatively small due to the sometimes daunting concentration and complexity of the music itself. Past performing groups have included the Amadeus, Budapest, Cleveland, Emerson, Guarneri, Juilliard String Quartets, and the Bozart and Kallikstein Laredo Robinson Trios. Last month, longtime performer the Tokyo String Quartet played at UM Gustman Hall as part of their American Farewell Concert Tour, as did the KLR Trio. While string quartets and trios live up to the organization's name, Julian Krieger himself has an unquenchable appetite for pianists, especially up-and-coming piano virtuosos. In his season opening in October, he presented the Austrian-Canadian pianist-composer, Czerny expert Anton Guerti, and then-Russian star Nikolai Lugansky. This past month, Krieger showcased pianist Cyprian Katsaris, well known for his Liszt transcriptions, and the very young British phenom Benjamin Grosvenor, whom South Florida emeritus pianist teacher and student of Vladimir Horowitz, Ivan Davis, considers one of the top young pianists on the scene today. With one concert left in March and two ending the season in May, Julian Krieger has a busy schedule ahead. Recently, I had the opportunity to talk with him about Friends of Chamber Music of Miami, its mission, his love for the arts, and the remaining season's offerings. Julian Krieger, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thank you for inviting me here.
Friends of Chamber Music of Miami was formed as a tax-exempt nonprofit corporation in 1955. You were not the founder, but you took over in what year?
1984.
Now, what motivated you to assume the reins of a cultural entity that deals with music that's not always very accessible to the general public in terms of style and substance?
Bob Kistler, who was the founder in 1955, asked me to become president, and I said, okay.
It was that simple.
It was that simple.
But this is not the easiest music for the general public.
Probably not, but it's some of the most valuable in terms of artistic merit, and I think it's a very, very important part of our culture in this community.
Now, what is your mission statement, and how would you assess the success or misses in the last decade?
Well, I prefer not to think about misses, but other than my wife, of course. But we try to bring the world's greatest chamber musicians and instrumentalists to Miami. And we're proud that in the last, well, certainly the 27 years that I'm most familiar with, we've had some of the greatest string quartets like the Juilliard Quartet, the Emerson Quartet, the Guarneri Quartet, and this past week we had the Tokyo Quartet on its farewell tour. And next week we're having one of the great new quartets, the Ennis Quartet.
Now, on your board of trustees, you have Bill Hipp, who's the former dean of music for the University of Miami. And bringing him on board certainly says something about the future, questions on funding, and an outreach to artists and musical organizations.
Well, we are privileged to have Bill, who's the dean emeritus of the Frost School of Music and a fabulous human being.
Now, you've had two rather extraordinary concerts just recently. You had the farewell concert of the Tokyo String Quartet, which you just mentioned, and a young British pianist phenom, Benjamin Grosvenor. What stood out for you on those two?
Well, Benjamin is the youngest pianist to have been soloist with the British in England, the Proms concerts. He is a huge, huge success in England and France, and he's made a couple of recordings for English Decca that are fabulous.
Now, there are three concerts left, Julian. The first one is on March 3rd with the Ennis Quartet at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church on Old Cutler Road in Palmetto Bay. What is the program, and tell us something about the style of this quartet.
Well, James Ennis is one of the great violinists of today, and about within the last 2 years, he formed a quartet. He played for us last year. It was wonderful with the quartet. And William DeRosa, they did an all Schubert program. The cellist is Bob Demain, who has recently been made principal cellist of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. So this is a major, major quartet. And with the retirement of the Tokyo quartet, they will be probably the premier quartet.
What's on the program?
They're playing the Barber String Quartet, which has the famous Adagio for strings, the Shostakovich Eighth Quartet, which is maybe his most important quartet, the Wolf Italian Serenade, and the Brahms, one of the Brahms quartets.
It's nice to have a little Shostakovich going on. We just had that recently over there at the Knight Performance Hall with the 10th Symphony.
Yes.
Now, the Polish pianist Rafał Blachowicz brings Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, and Szymanowski's Sonata No. 1 to FIU's Wertheim Auditorium May 7th. You collaborated with the Chopin Foundation of the U.S. with this concert.
That is correct. Rafael won the 2005 Chopin competition in Warsaw, which is one of the maybe the two most important piano competitions in the world. And this is his Florida debut.
And what will he be playing?
He will be playing a Bach Partita, Beethoven's Sonata in D Major, Opus 10, Number 3, four pieces by Chopin and the Szymanowski First Sonata.
What's exciting about this pianist? Is it more than just technique?
It's more than just technique. It's his musicianship, and I think you'll see why he won the 2005 Chopin competition.
Very tough competition. Your last concert, May 15th at UM's Gusman Hall, brings baritone Alexei Lavrov and pianist Ken Noda in songs and arias from Rachmaninoff and Tchaikovsky to Mozart and Georgi Sviridov.
Well, we are fortunate to have had a wonderful relationship with Ken Noda over the last 9 or 10 years. Ken is James Levine's musical assistant at the Metropolitan Opera. And every year he will tell me who he thinks or who he and Levine thinks will emerge as a major singer. And I say, fine, bring him.
That's not bad having those two to give you a little information.
No, I think they know what they're doing, certainly better than I do.
And how is Maestro Levine doing?
I understand he's improving a bit and maybe conducting more at the Met again.
Julian, any surprises for next season you might like to reveal to the ArtsBeat audience?
Well, we will be delighted to have Nikolai Lugansky again. He played this year for us in between a Rachmaninoff Third with the Boston Symphony and a Rachmaninoff Paganini Rhapsody with the New York Philharmonic.
Remind us a little bit about the recital earlier this year when he was here.
He's a phenomenal pianist. He played Schubert and Janáček and Rachmaninoff. And during the concert, we had a visit from Sandy, a short visit, and the hall went totally black. And he was in the last movement of the Rachmaninoff Second Sonata, and he didn't miss a note. And there were notes flying all over the place, the right notes, I should say. And he just went ahead like nothing happened. It was fabulous. We will have Anton Querty probably with the string quartet. We will have the fabulous clarinetist from the Philadelphia Orchestra, Ricardo Morales, with Joseph Kallikstein and Roberto Diaz. Roberto was principal violist of the Philadelphia Orchestra and plays the Primrose Viola. He's now president of Curtis Institute. Fabulous, fabulous violas.
Well, that sounds very, very exciting. And I think that all of our audience should think that this is a real possibility for them to hear some really great music.
And we also expect to have Valentina Lisitsa come back and play a recital for us.
Well, Valentina is probably becoming one of the great pianists around. And you have experience with her in the past. You
absolutely
first saw her back in 1995, recorded for Audiophon, I believe.
Yes, and she's fabulous, playing and simple.
Well, we're going to see her too. I just can't wait. So I would just say, Julian Krieger, thank you so much for coming to South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thank you for having me.
In their 57th season, Friends of Chamber Music of Miami showcases the world's top string quartets, trios, and upcoming pianists and other performers. Besides bringing exemplary chamber music to South Florida, their mission is to reach out to new audiences, especially people who may not be as well acquainted with the sometimes difficult but always rewarding world of chamber music. Julian Krieger deserves great credit for persevering in his role as president of Friends of Chamber Music of Miami. For information on tickets and its upcoming schedule, call 305-372-2975 or go to their website at miamichambermusic.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Students, CultureShockMiami.com is your pass to the arts, offering inexpensive tickets to music, theater, museums, festivals, dance, and more, such as the Miami Classical Guitar Society's presentation, February 23rd, Eddie Palmieri, Latin jazz legend, performing March 9th, and the Dranoff International Two Piano Foundation, featuring the Genova Dimitrov Piano Duo, winners of the 1997 Dranoff Duo Piano Competition, on March 8th at the Gusman Concert Hall. So go to CultureShockMiami.com for more information. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Charles Greenfield and Dan Hudak. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with host Joseph Cooper, Monday at 1 o'clock. That also includes Bonnie Berman. Have yourself a great weekend, and as always, please keep your dial set to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy!